Can you hear me back there? Okay, cool. We'll get set up here. You all are lucky to have a church here locally that will sponsor these types of events. There are many who won't, don't want anything to do with it. And it was a few years ago, the first Red Pill Expo was held in Bozeman. And the Red Pill Expo was held in Bozeman, Montana, at a church. We happen to score this church, big church, beautiful facility, kind of out in the country. We had amazingly 700, almost 800 people show up, shocked us to death. This is back in what, Charmaine, 2018, maybe? I forget. A friend of mine and myself were the executive managers of that conference, and we put it on, and we were very low-key. We had about 15, 18 speakers over two and a half days. And when we're all done, we thought for sure we're going to come back to that church again and do it again the next year, because it was just such a perfect venue, and people flew in from all over the country to attend this thing. And so when my friend Debbie went to talk to the church again, they said, well, we've decided that we're not going to have you back again next year. And it's like, well, there's nothing really radical about what we did. But somebody complained in the church, and then the elders had a meeting, and they decided, oh, it's too risky. We might lose some members because we're doing stuff like this. And they basically just said, take a hike. And there's a lot of churches around the country that have this attitude. It's kind of a shame. They should be the ones that are on the front line, honestly. But you folks are lucky to have a facility here that is willing to host these type of events. So if you have an opportunity to give them an attaboy, give them an attaboy, please. Okay, what we're going to talk about, we're up on the screen. Hopefully we're not going to have any misconnections, disconnections today. We're going to talk about genetic takeover of all DNA on Earth, including humans. And this is going to be the segment that really focuses on transhumanism. Some of you have some idea of what transhumanism is, I suppose. Have you heard the word before a little bit? Have you read an article maybe? Any article on transhumanism in the last 2 or 3 months? Okay. Well, a lot of this is going to be new to you. But this is going to be the biggest meme, I believe, in the next year, year and a half, 2 years. Surprisingly, I had a meeting conversation with Steve Bannon it's been probably a year and a half now. And we were talking about transhumanism because that's kind of what I do, and he was talking a lot about transhumanism on the War Room. And he said to me that he predicts, or he thinks, that transhumanism is going to be the major topic of the 2024 election cycle. That was kind of shocking at the time. I thought, I don't know about that. You know, here I'm a guy, Mr. Transhuman, right? I study this stuff. I'm not so sure about that. And now that some time has gone by and I see what's happening and I see people like you here listening and eager to hear about transhumanism and technocracy too, of course, I believe that now. I'm getting closer to really buying into that thought that this is going to be the major thing people want to talk about. And considering all the people that are face-planting and dropping dead from myocarditis and heart attacks and blood clots and everything else around the country, people are getting very concerned about what's going on. Very concerned. Even people who were hardcore on the other side, don't even talk to me about that. I don't want to hear about it. You know, I'm taking the shot. I'm doing this. You know, get out of my face sort of thing. The ones that are calling all of us deniers and et cetera. Even they are coming out of the fog saying, I don't know what's going on, but Uncle Mo died last week, you know, and it was very strange because nothing added up with his dying, you know. So we're gonna cover this today, and you're going to hear some things, learn some things that you probably never saw before. You already know the title of my latest book is The Evil Twins of Technocracy and Transhumanism, and the reason that I did this together is because they've joined forces now. Technocracy was bad enough in itself. If we didn't have anything to do with transhumanism, technocracy ought to set your hair on fire just by itself. We don't want the world restructured. We don't want resources controlled. What made America great was private property. The ability to own and control your own property and your own destiny. Without private property, America would not be anywhere close to where it is. We'd be like, Uganda or somewhere, or some third world country that doesn't have property rights. They live in poverty. A whole country lives in poverty. What's made us great is the, and this is a protection of our Constitution, what has made us great is the economic system allows for the ownership of private property. And when we're denied the right to private property, basically we're out of business. And some of you know, whether you're farmers, landowners, homeowners, whatever, you know how the encroachment and the pressure has come in on private property in the last 20 years. If you don't, you're just not paying attention. It's been incredible pressure, stripping away rights one at a time on what you can do with your property or what you can't do with your property. And for some people, it's down to the point now, well, I own this piece of property. I can't do anything with it, so now I'm a slave. I can't sell it because now I have to pay taxes on it to boot. And they've tied me to a whipping post. I want to get rid of this property. I can't even sell it because so many rights have been taken away. Nobody wants to buy it. Well, anyway, that's for another story. This particular book, people ask me of my books, which one should we read first? I say The Evil Twins of Technocracy and Transhumanism. I think we're probably out of books back there, but you'll see I'm going to give you all the places where you can get it at the end, including my website, Technocracy News. Of course, it's on Amazon, too. There's a Kindle version on Amazon. This guy, I don't know who this is, Timothy Strauss, he put his whole name in. That was nice. And he gave a nice star review on this, but this was recent. The reason I read this is just this. He said, I have read Patrick Wood's prior books in this three-part series. So he's read the first two books. And though all important reads, this is the most important. Few have the broad perspective of unifying understanding, blah, blah, blah. Absolutely a critical read, he wrote. Time is getting short. May God save us. And in the end of it, yeah, may God save us. But I've heard this from a lot of people as they started to read this book, that they can understand it, that it speaks to them. And I wrote this to be, as I put on the back cover, I wrote this to be an everyman's guide to technocracy and transhumanism. So it's simple. And I say simple. Even a high schooler can understand it. It's an easy read. It's gentle to read. It's not full of details, so difficult you can't understand it. So I would encourage you, if you have the book, fine. If you don't have it, you should get it and read it. And then beyond that, you can use this as something to give to somebody. So if you want to understand simply and quickly, read this book. And if they're thirsty for more, they can go back and read the other books. It's that simple. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about the Great Reset, too. And you recognize, well, you know Time Magazine, of course. This issue, when was this issue? This was back, I can't even read it, about 2020, I think, maybe. 2020, maybe. The Great Reset. The world is surrounded by scaffolding. They've got half the thing torn off up there. They've got a guy plant trees, another guy, with a rivet gun, and they're remaking the world. This is Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum reimagining the future for us. How are we going to do it? What do we want the world to look like 50 years from now? Time Magazine did a special on it. They do a special on a lot of stuff. And I want to tell you, Time Magazine was one of those media giants that was very close to the Trilateral Commission when they first started in 73. Hedley Donovan was the editor-in-chief of Time at the time, served many years. As editor-in-chief, and he was a member of the Trilateral Commission. And the deal was with them and Newsweek and Wall Street Journal and others that were part of that original crowd, they could attend the meetings, but they weren't allowed to write about whatever was talked about there. It was a gag order, essentially, put on the media. That's one reason you never heard about it. So Time Magazine could go to those things, but they weren't supposed to say anything about it later on. So when Time Magazine comes up with something like this, okay, this means something because they've still stayed close to that trilateral core over the decades. So I want to ask the question, what is transhumanism? This is written by the founder of modern transhumanism, Max Moore. He's credited kind of as being the intellectual genius behind it, PhD in philosophy. He's actually lives in Scottsdale, Arizona with his wife. He wrote in the early 1990s, transhumanism promotes an interdisciplinary approach, that's NBIC, which I'm going to show you in a second, to understanding and evaluating the opportunities for enhancing the human condition and the human organism opened up by the advancement of technology. Attention is given to both present technologies like, catch it, genetic engineering and information technology, that's computers, and anticipated future ones such as molecular nanotechnology and artificial intelligence. Now, this was written back in the day when none of the things today existed. They were just glimmers in the eyes of developers. But he got it, and he jumped on it. He said, this is our ticket out of here, guys. You know, immortality straight ahead. If we just follow this brick road, we'll get there. Max Moore. This is in NBIC. I'm going to explain the concept of NBIC to you, often called convergence or technological convergence. Every university, major university in the world now, has established some type of an NBIC discipline within their university, combining people from different departments into working groups that study things that have to do with human enhancement. And the NBIC around the dark green circles in the center, you see nanotechnology is what the N stands for. That's the study of molecular compounds, creating new forms of molecular matter. The B stands for biotechnology, which has to do with genes, genetic engineering, et cetera. The C stands for cognitive technology. That's the science of the mind, neurons, synapses, and all that kind of stuff. And the I stands for information technologies, and that has to do with bits, ones and zeros, and 1, 2, 3, 4s, and whatever. And together, you can see on the outside of it, in the lighter green, you can see generally what that applies to, atoms, genes, neurons, and bits. And you can also see the division between the vertical division, the physical over here, biology over here, and then top to bottom, the hardware on the top and the software on the bottom. This has been sliced and diced by these scientists in these different departments over the last 20 years. And this is a new thing. It's really about 20, 22 or 23 years old. But as I said, every university around the world has an NBIC function now, where they're getting together and saying, how can we combine our forces to resources to figure out ways to enhance the human condition? This means that there's been trillions of dollars poured into this whole area, trillions of dollars. It also means, by and large, it's all taxpayer funded. Thank you very much. They took our tax money, and they took tax money in other countries, like in European countries and around the world. And they pay all these engineers and scientists to get together to do this stuff. This is the problem. This NBIC has been the technological meal ticket, if you will, for the people who want to achieve immortality to get there. By the way, they're not going to get there, right? They think they're going to get there. Don't think that I'm predicting that they are going to get there, because they will have a very difficult brick wall coming up. The World Economic Forum is also promoting transhumanism, just like Max Moore. Of course, he promotes the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which is technocracy warmed over sustainable development, controlling all the resources of the world. But here's what the World Economic Forum on their website says. The central premise of transhumanism, then, is that biological evolution will eventually be overtaken by advances in genetic, wearable, and implantable technologies that artificially expedite the evolutionary process. Isn't that about the same thing that Max Moore said back in the early 90s, I think? This is really crazy stuff. You're talking about biological evolution? Well, here's the thing. On one hand, this whole crowd, technocrats and transhumanism, all of them together, deny intelligent design of anything, of any life or universe or whatever. They deny intelligent design, of course. They deny the existence of God. But believing in evolution as they do, because of the tools at their disposal now, that is to manipulate matter and to edit genes and stuff like that, they think now that they are going to become the intelligent designers. You know, say, well, that was a great idea to have an intelligent design. We don't believe in that stuff. We don't believe in God. We don't believe anybody put us together. intentionally to be like we are today. But by the way, now that we're here, we, almighty we, are now capable of being the intelligent designers of the future. So we'll reimagine the future, and then we'll retrofit that back into our science, and we'll figure out how to make your genes work and how to make matter work, etc. And we'll all be one big happy family going forward, because we're going to have a new world coming, designed in their own eyes and their own image. It's kind of ironic, isn't it? Not believing intelligent design, but now rising up as God themselves, saying, we will be the intelligent designers. We will take over the evolutionary process now. From now on, report to us, not to evolution or not to God. So we're going to take a little trip. Back in 1992, we've already talked about this, the Rio de Janeiro conference, the so-called UNCED conference, also called the First Earth Conference, coming together to save the earth, they said. They're going to save the earth. That has spiritual implications, by the way. I wouldn't read it just mean we're going to save it like we're just going to keep it from destruction or something. This has a spiritual connotation, as you'll see, I think, as we go through this, that these people indeed are up to playing themselves as being God. Collectively, maybe individually, whatever, they're positioning themselves to be God and completely removing the God of the Bible and the God of, you know, history and creation out into the cold. So when they say they're coming together to save the earth, they're providing a way and a mechanism in their mind, not ours, but in their mind, they're providing a way and a mechanism to be saved, from our current condition. You look around at the people here. It's okay to look at each other. If you look at the people here. Do we need to be saved from the earth? No. Well, if you already have studied the tenets of Christianity and you understand the proposition of Christ and salvation, etc., you don't need to be saved in the sense that they want you to be saved. You're already saved. It didn't cost you a nickel. No taxpayer funding was required, right? You got it for free, which is really cool. Great deal. These people they reject that, of course, but they realize that the world needs to be saved, and they're rising up to save the world. And they offer a plan of salvation, as we'll see in the second message. Now, just to kind of recap again how the Earth Summit came together in the 1992, that produced Agenda 21 and the so-called Global Biodiversity Assessment, there were two people that provided all of the doctrine for Agenda 21. And this is documented in the United Nations literature. It's not my idea, it's theirs. One was Gro Harlem Brundtland, the former Prime Minister of Norway. She chaired a committee for the United Nations, and it was called the Brundtland Commission because she was in charge of it. She produced this book at the end of it called Our Common Future. That's available on Amazon too. It says the World Commission on Environment and Development, and in this was the whole document, the whole doctrine of sustainable development codified, taken basically lock, stock, and barrel by the United Nations into Agenda 21. And it spread to the world because of the United Nations. Another guy that was involved in it was Jim McNeil from Canada. He was not, he wrote a book for, actually this book was produced and published by the Trilateral Commission, Beyond Interdependence. Remember, we talked about interdependence yesterday. McNeil, although not a member of the Trilateral Commission, wrote books and papers and position papers and spoke to the Trilateral Commission incessantly. He also is credited as being one of the fathers of sustainable development. Gro Harlem Brundtland, not by surprise, is a member of the Trilateral Commission. Question, was she writing Our Common Future for the sake of Norway, for the sake of humanity as a whole, or for the policy of the Trilateral Commission? You can answer that one yourself, self-evident. She was writing a policy, she was writing a doctrine that came straight out of the bowels of the Trilateral Commission. And the same was true of McNeil. So this entire doctrine that came into Agenda 21 and Global Biodiversity, we can look straight back at the Trilateral Commission and say, There. Here's their people. You saw it yesterday, how they all came through at the USTR, World Bank, all that sort of stuff. These people just continued that mission to give the whole thing to the United Nations, which in their mind became contagion. That is, the ability to spread it virally to the world. That was the whole point. So this is where it came from. We make no mistake, this is Trilateral Commission policy from the get-go. There was two tracks, however, at that Rio de Janeiro convention. One had to do just with Agenda 21 and sustainable development, and the blue book at the bottom, the Global Biodiversity Assessment, was a separate track. It was same conference, just different track. We see this all the time. Like if you have a computer conference, you might have different tracks for workshops that you break out into, right? You might have one for hardware, one for software, one for programming, one for business management, and you take the track that you want to take, but it's all the same conference. Well, this was the two tracks of the conference. Agenda 21 was the primary, and then the Global Biodiversity Assessment was the secondary. Agenda 21 set the agenda. The Global Biodiversity Assessment told you what it meant, what it was going to mean to you as as it was implemented. And we'll talk about that a little bit. After the conference in 1992, there were two authors that wrote a book called The Earth Brokers, who were actually principals in the discussions at the Rio conference. They went in good faith, hoping that there was going to be some type of agreement to limit development, or at least control development, especially in the third world, to stop the destruction of the ecology in the third world. This is a big problem back then. Everybody down in southern South America hated America because we were taking advantage of their economic resources, and they got raped, pillaged, and plundered, it seemed like, just about every other decade, and they were really sick of it. And these guys went to this this thing thinking, maybe, finally, we're going to get some resolution to stop this development nonsense that's wrecking the world. Well, they came away a little disillusioned from this, and they ended up writing this book called The Earth Brokers, and you have stockbrokers, right? What do stockbrokers do? Well, they buy and sell stock, right? What do earth brokers do? Well, they buy and sell the earth. That's the whole point. They had a very dim view of what happened at that, and they were eyewitnesses, and by the way, they were not on our side necessarily in the sense they weren't conservative. They were actually quite liberal. But they saw through it. In fact, you could call them kind of the original Greens. The original Greens from the 60s are nothing like the Greens today. Nothing. You can see some of those people if you go to some of the more liberal enclaves in America. You can see some of those old guys walking around with gray ponytails, and they're still wearing their sweatshirts, you know, with green pieces on it, stuff like that on it. But I want to read you some of the stuff that they said in their book, because this really sets the stage for where we're going with this. They wrote first, "We argue that UNCED," that was the Master Agenda 21 conference, and that stands for UN Conference on Economic Development, by the way, UNCED. "We argue that UNCED has boosted precisely the type of industrial development," I call it technocracy, "that is destructive for the environment, the planet, and its inhabitants. We see how, as a result of UNCED, the rich will get richer, the poor poor, while more and more of the planet is destroyed in the process." Can you say amen to that? What's happened since? From then, 1992, to today, the rich have gotten richer, check. The poor poorer, check. While more and more of the planet is destroyed in the process. We have more ecological disaster today than we've had ever. And there seems to be no end to it. In fact, just what happened in Michigan with the train spill in Palestine, or Palestine, is that what it's called, or Palestine, whatever. that one disaster created more craziness, more pollution and stuff than just about everything else that happened in America in the last 10 years. So development itself was, taking advantage of everything in sight, and it's destroying the planet in the process. But then they wrote about the Biodiversity Convention. This was kind of a side note to what they were writing about, but they talked about that separately in a separate chapter. The convention, meaning the Biodiversity Convention, implicitly equates the diversity of life, that is animals and plants, to the diversity of genetic codes. By doing so, diversity becomes something modern science can manipulate. It promotes biotechnology as being essential for the conservation and sustainable use of biodiversity. Now, you need to absorb that just a little bit, what they're saying here. I didn't see this 10 years ago. I read the book shortly after it was published. I didn't get this, until I went back when COVID hit. And I just was glancing through the book again. I just do that sometimes to see what I marked and where I put stickers and stuff like that. And I ran across this and I said, what is wrong with me? I never saw this. I never saw this before. It didn't mean anything to me. So I read it and I just passed over it. Diversity of genetic codes. Diversity becomes something modern science can manipulate. See, the groundwork apparently was being laid way back here in 1992 for much of the stuff that we're seeing today. They went on to write, the main stake raised by the Biodiversity Convention, and there were some 20,000 people at this convention. It was huge. The main stake raised, not the minor stake, not an incidental stake, not just a big stake. They said the main stake raised by the Biodiversity Convention is the issue of ownership and control over biological diversity. The major concern was protecting the pharmaceutical and emerging biotechnology industries. Let that sink in just for a second. The main stake, the issue of ownership and control over biological diversity. Those of you who are close to the farming industry or ranching industry know that before 1992, there was no issue with ownership of seeds, for instance, that farmers might plant in the ground. Since 1992, Monsanto took this as marching orders, and they proceeded at this point to virtually manipulate and genetically modify every crop seed on the planet to put it away in their little portfolio of seeds that they could sell and license to farmers for a hefty fee. And of course, they could sell them Roundup too if they wanted to kill the weeds and not kill the plants. But this has gone on all around the planet now. Ownership and control over biological diversity. You would think diversity, on one hand, you might have a definition in your mind. It's not the right one. We talk about biological diversity. That's what they're talking about. And the major concern was the swarm of people that was there was the pharmaceutical and emerging biotechnology industries cutting out their turf, setting themselves up for the next 25, 30 years. This leads us all the way to Moderna. You remember Moderna, the messenger RNA shots. Moderna's name originally was mRNA. Take the first letter M, and you see the last three letters, RNA. Okay, so they changed their name to Moderna, whatever. And that's where you get messenger RNA. That's their specialty. The chief medical officer before 2019 was Tal Zaks. He's not there anymore. Moved on. On their website, he was credited as saying this. This was on their website. You can go to the Wayback Machine, and you can find that on the Moderna website. He said, direct quote, "We are actually hacking the software of life. We think about it as an operating system." Can you see why they took this down, by the way? So if you could actually change that, if you could introduce a line of code or change the line of code, it turns out it has profound implications for everything. No joke. This was the attitude of Moderna. It's the attitude of all of them that are processing messenger RNA anything because it has to do with genetics, genetic modification. All of these shots, by the way, I'm not going to go into the technical part of this, but all of these shots, whatever's in them, the messenger RNA package that's in them, is not found in nature. It's all created synthetically. In other words, that's put together synthetically according to the design of messenger RNA, and then it's injected into your body with these shots. It's designed to cause your body to do something that it didn't do before. Those of you who are maybe close to farming will remember the biggest problem that farmers ever had with cotton was the bollworm. It's a scourge to cotton crops because it gets inside the little cotton bolls and it ruins them so they can't be picked, and it ruins the whole harvest because you don't want them in there with all the good cotton. So Monsanto figured out a way to put a previously used insecticide that was sprayed on cotton fields to get rid of the bollworm called BT. I can't remember what BT stands for, but it's called BT. And so what Monsanto did was genetically modify the cotton seed to trick the plant into producing its own BT so that it didn't have to be sprayed. That's the same thing they've done with messenger RNA shots with us. It's just different stuff and different expression, but it's tricking our body into doing something that it wasn't really designed to do. I got to keep on time. I want to talk about other stuff, but I got to keep on time. This is a short clip by Yuval Noah Harari, who's principal advisor to Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. He's a little bit off the wall, but I want you to hear this man, hear what he says in relation to what I just said. This is the belief of the World Economic Forum as well. He said it, but he's been feeding this to the World Economic Forum. And you just have to see it and hear it for yourself.
Well, I think maybe in a couple of decades when people look back, the thing they will remember from the COVID crisis is this is the moment when everything went digital. And this was the moment when everything became monitored, that we agreed to be surveilled all the time, not just in authoritarian machines, but even in democracies. And maybe most importantly at all, this was the moment when surveillance started going under the skin. Because really, we haven't seen anything yet. I think the big process that's happening right now in the world is hacking human beings, the ability to hack humans, to understand deeply what's happening within you, what makes you go. And for that, the most important data is not what you read and who you meet and what you buy, it's what's happening inside your body.
Okay. Do you hear what he's saying? Under your skin. Klaus Schwab said the same thing when he talks about the fourth industrial revolution. He talks about, it means there's going to be big changes to society. Pardon? Are we right up against it? No, I'm okay. Okay, no, I'm good. I'll be on time for this session. Klaus Schwab, when he's talking about the fourth industrial revolution, says exactly the same thing. He talks about changing society on one hand, but then he said what it's really about, and he's got this little hand gesture he does like this, like he's shaking a pencil or something, you know, at you. He says, but it's going to change you, he says. And then he talks about genetic engineering. It's going to change you, the fourth industrial revolution. This is the world they're reimagining for us. That we are genetically, we're going to be changed genetically, he says, and I know a lot of people are not going to go for that, but that's what he says, this is where it's going. So the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, and all these other people that operate in universities that are promoting transhumanism, Max Moore included, Tal Zaks, Moderna, Pfizer, the rest of them, BioNTech, all these people that are promoting genetic modification of humans, there are transhumans. We have to ask the question now, in light of 1992, what has been GMO'd so far? What has been GMO'd? Now, you all have been following the news over a period of time, I'm sure. You know that there have been a multitude of seeds, especially crop seeds, that have been modified by Monsanto and a couple of other companies, genetically modified. You name the crop, it's probably already been modified. You've got tomatoes, you've got rapeseed or canola, you've got wheat, you've got rice, you've got beans. I mean, virtually every crop seed on the planet has been modified by Monsanto over a period of years. They've licensed it all. And the reason they can license it, even though it's life, the law, unfortunately, in our country reads, natural life cannot be patented. If it occurs naturally in nature, it cannot be patented. But if somebody makes a substantive change to it, it can be patented and it can be owned. That's the way the law reads, the patent law reads now. That was one of the things that they broke down back in the 90s, by the way, to get that passed that way, the ownership of derivative products from DNA. So seeds have been modified. insects have been modified. If you've been following that story with a company like Oxitec, for instance, they've created a GMO mosquito that breeds with a female mosquito, and the offspring don't live. They have a kill switch built into them. So they can't rise out of the water, they just simply die in place. The idea of a kill switch kind of bothers me personally when you're talking about genetic modification. Animals have been genetically modified. Beef, you have double beef, double meat steers now. They're grotesque, totally grotesque. Same thing with pigs, chickens, turkeys. Got chickens in here twice. I don't know why. Maybe they're, you know, little chickens and big chickens or something. But but they've been genetically modified. And most of the stuff you get in the store today, unless it says otherwise, probably have genetic, some type of genetic anomaly in them. Fish have been genetically modified. In bulk, you've got salmon, trout, catfish, tilapia, striped bass, and flounder for just a start. Many of these can be farm-grown, you know, raised in a controlled situation. So most of the fish that you buy in the store, check it out. If it's farm-raised, it's probably GMO fish. And, of course, the argument is, well, you know, we created this, we took this salmon and we did a GMO job on it, now and it grows 30% faster. The farmers growing the fish say, well, that's a good deal. I can grow fish 30% faster. That means I get 30% more money, or close, because I can cycle out the crops. Bacteria have been modified extensively. You've all heard of oil spills that have been taking place periodically around the world. Well, they've got new bacteria now that they can raise in mass, and it goes in and it consumes the oil products in the water, and it cleans up the spill. Those are genetically modified bacteria. And then you have, of course, genetically modified viruses. Now, people can argue, you may disagree with me on this, but it has now been determined that the virus known as SARS-CoV-2 was released from a laboratory, either in China or could have been in the United States, but nevertheless, it was released because it was undergoing gain-of-function research, which means it was being genetically modified and intensified. And now we come to humans. What else is left besides humans, right? We're the only other species on Earth that these people can sink their claws into. And this just reminded me.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Her ongoing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life forms and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Yeah, the last frontier is humanity. So let me take you on a journey through Time magazine starting in 1971. You probably missed this headline, The New Genetics, Man into Superman. You'll wonder when I'm done with this, you see these pictures worth 1,000 words, you wonder where on earth were we while all these signs were being laid out before us, clear as crystal, and nobody had context to understand it. How about 1977? The DNA Fuhrer tinkering with life. How about 1984? Shaping life in the lab, the boom in genetic engineering. You see, it was coming all these years, it was building. How about 1994? Genetics. The future is now. New breakthroughs can cure diseases and save lives, but how much should nature be engineered, they said. Good question. They didn't answer it. How about 1999? Special issue. The future of medicine. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. The future of medicine. How genetic engineering will change us in the next century. Could it be any more clear? How about 2015? The gene machine. What the CRISPR experiments mean for humanity. Well, this is a baby. The article is about designer babies, creating designer babies in the womb. So you can genetically engineer the genetic material going into the zygote, and here you end up with a designer baby. How about Scientific American from 2018, right before the pandemic came at us? Progress and Controversy, Genetic Engineering, and I clipped out the table of contents in here. Section 1, Gene Therapy for the 21st Century, that's us now. 1.2, pay attention, the RNA Revolution. Ring a bell? The RNA Revolution. 1.3 is kind of disturbing too, the on-off switch for genes. But you wonder how the ramp-up happened for messenger RNA injections. You can see it. They were talking about it for a long time in advance. Well, good old Klaus Schwab talks about a post-human condition. If you're transhuman, that means you're going across the great divide to eventually come to a post-human condition. That's always the case. Anything that says trans means transitory. So he said about a post-human condition, that this was right off their website, the end of humanity's reliance on our congenital bodies by transforming our frail version 1.0 human bodies into their far more durable and capable version 2.0 counterparts. They've all bought into this en masse. These are the people that are the movers and shakers of our world, that are reimagining the future, and they're putting everything they've got, all the cards are on the table. How on earth did we miss all this stuff over the last 30 to 40 years? Beyond me, honestly. Now you have Klaus. I just got to play this for you too, just to make any doubt that this is not a complete con job. But listen to what Klaus Schwab has to say.
So what should you do? Use the millennials and the generation set. What should you do differently? Most immediately, you are calling for the international community to safeguard vaccine equity to respond to COVID-19 and prevent future health crises. Nobody will be safe if not everybody is vaccinated. Nobody will be safe if not everybody is vaccinated.
Nobody will be safe until everybody is vaccinated. Oh boy. Well, you can see this is the same message that we had all along the way from the beginning, the first time that COVID hit. This is the message we had. The whole world had to be vaccinated. Why would they do that to the whole world, not even knowing if this was going to be an effective treatment for anything? This next little clip I want to give you comes from the EU. A member of parliament or member of the EU asked this question of a vice president of Pfizer in a committee meeting in Europe. This didn't get much play over here, but we had it on film.
Was the Pfizer COVID vaccine tested on stopping the transmission of the virus before it entered the market? If not, please say it clearly. If yes, are you willing to share the data with this committee? And I really want a straight answer, yes or no, and I'm looking forward to it. Thank you very much.
Now listen.
Regarding the question around, did we know about stopping humanization before it entered the market? No. We had to really move at the speed of science to really understand what is taking place in the market. And from that point of view, we had to do everything at risk.
You get the point? The whole thing was a sham. It was not tested. This is the vice president of Pfizer saying it was not tested for transmissibility before it entered the marketplace. And whatever the speed of science is that they were moving at, nobody knows. You've never heard that rate of speed. Well, we move at the speed of science here. I don't know what the speed of science is, but it probably is too fast for the world. So this whole thing, this whole COVID debacle, had more to do with genetic modification a la transhumanism than it did with curing a disease of any kind, likely that was already genetically engineered through gain-of-function research, brought into the world. Then the shots, the messenger RNA shots, were brought up. And it's interesting that Moderna, at least in Moderna's case, they had mRNA shots already stockpiled to some extent, small stockpiles, before COVID was even announced. So, how did that happen? Well, yeah, really. So you have Klaus Schwab, for instance, writing The Great Narrative. That was one of his books that he wrote, The Great Narrative for a Better Future. And whoever controls the narrative, I'll say this, controls everything else. We're going to talk about free speech in the next section. Whoever controls the narrative controls everything. I'm not going to tell you who these people are. Just look at them and see if you can guess who some of them are. I'm not going to say it, but you ought to recognize some of the picture. This is not exclusive, by the way, but these are some of the major players that had to do with this narrative that's been pushed on us. This is the bottom line. The Great Reset can be explained like this. Technocracy is to societal structure and operation. Remember the globe we had on the first slide? Technocracy is to societal structure and operation as transhumans are to the humans who live there. Make sense? You know, in the Bible, there's a principle. You don't put new wine into old wineskins. If there's any vintners here, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you put new wine in old skins that are brittle, they're stretched already, they'll break, they'll burst, and you lose all the wine. You put new wine into new skins. Same principle here. In their mind, they're thinking, if we're creating a new society, a brand new world, societal structure and operation, sustainable development, technocracy, from top-down scientific dictatorship sort of thing, why would we want to put these same old humans that wrecked the last system into the new system to wreck it too? I know that's a simple thought, but in their mind, it's reality. They believe that their new system won't work without a new humanity coming into it. How they're going to, you know, what their ultimate design will look like, maybe anybody's guess, but it's going to be ugly. Here's a free section just for you people who are homeschoolers out here. This is how society works. You have like a triangle. You have a religion, an economic system, and a political system that have to be in balance with each other. And there's great diversity in the world. You've got India with Hinduism. You've got China with Buddhism. You've got Europe with a smattering of everything, mostly humanism at this point. Every society has a balance that allows that society to move forward. It may be radically different than ours. Religion, economics, and a political system. They support the structure of society to make it work. An example of our society, I think, is probably pretty accurate. Mostly in America, we had Christianity as the principal religion. And then also we had, as an economic system, we had capitalism, and as a political system, we had a republic. Now, those three things worked in perfect, really in very good balance to support us for 200 plus years and turn America into probably the greatest nation that the world has ever seen. But the way we're headed now for this transformed society, transhumanism is going to take the place of religion because, again, remember, become like God, achieve immortality, become omniscient, et cetera, et cetera. These are godlike qualities. We have technocracy being the economic structure, and we have scientific dictatorship being the political structure. This is where we're headed. This is where we came from. This is where we're headed. This is where we came from. This is where we're headed. All three of our institutions have been attacked at the same time. Think about that for a minute. All three have been attacked. We've had attacks on Christianity, attacks on capitalism, and attacks on the Constitutional Republic. They went after all three, and this is where we're headed, the total transformation. And I want to suggest the great ending. We're getting closer to Sunday. I get a little chance to preach once in a while, but we're getting closer. The great ending, I'll take it from Revelation 11:18. This is right after the time when the kingdoms of the world have been delivered to the Lord Jesus Christ, and down in the paragraph we come across this. It's directly taken from Psalm 2, the first statement. The nations were angry, and your wrath has come. The time has come for judging the dead and for rewarding your servants, the prophets and your saints, and those who reverence your name, both small and great. That was of great cheer, by the way, to the church that we see in heaven at that time. They're rejoicing, actually, because of the statement. Yeah, right. It's, you know, we're getting close to that, rewarding the servants of him. But the last little tag phrase on that, is very puzzling, and you should read it too for yourself just to see, and for destroying those who destroy the earth. And who on earth would that be? Who is destroying the earth? Even according to the earth brokers, who as far as I know had nothing to do with Christianity whatsoever, they said that these people involved in the Agenda 21, this whole sustainable development thing, they are destroying the earth, the physical earth. They're destroying it. We'll talk about that a little bit more in the next session. This is going to be the great ending. So don't think for a minute that these people are going to succeed what they think they're going to succeed at. They won't. And we'll talk about it next time. I think we're right on time.